This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Here tonight, it's Ian.
And Aria.
And Aria, you had a story you were going to share with us about Chase Bank targeting Bitcoiners in the ongoing crackdown that we've been seeing across the Bitcoin world. We discussed this Operation Choke Point 2.0 briefly last week.
Who named it that?
I don't think it's an official name. It's what this guy, Nick Carter, writer at a Substack called Pirate Wires, has called this. But the Choke Point 1.0 was where they were cracking down and during the Obama administration on like people that were doing sex-related businesses, porn producers, people like that. Also gun shops, gun manufacturers, things like that. These were being essentially denied bank accounts. Banks were shutting down their accounts. Even though they're completely legal businesses, they were just basically being told by the government, hey, look, we're going to make life difficult on you if you don't shut down these accounts. And now we're seeing similar things happening with the cryptocurrency industry, where bankers have been told in recent weeks that, it's not illegal to have accounts for cryptocurrency companies or crypto exchanges or whatever, but we don't look kindly upon it here at the federal government, the Federal Reserve, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, these different FDIC, the different regulatory agencies of the banking industry. So the banks are basically on notice, and of course many of the banks have been hostile towards crypto from the beginning, but those banks...
Well, it's competition.
Right, but those banks that actually didn't see crypto as competition, but might have seen it as a new service to offer their customers because they were like, I don't know, not completely closed-minded as far as banks go. Well, they've been given a spanking recently, essentially, by the federal government and told, you better stop doing this. We're not going to say what's going to happen to you, but something bad may just happen to you if you keep messing with this crypto stuff.
That tends to be how it goes with the federal government. I mean, we've seen it a lot with the SEC in recent years where they don't tell you what you're supposed to do or what you're not allowed to do or how you're supposed to do it. And they won't really tell you what the punishment is for not doing for doing what they didn't tell you that you couldn't do, but they're going to do something bad.
Yeah, and you can look at what they are doing, which is the SEC is going after stablecoins now. They've already gone after our friends over at Library, and they won the case against Library. That has yet to still be, quote-unquote, settled as far as what the punishment is going to be doled out, but ultimately Library is not going to survive this because they're completely out of funds. And
well, this bankrupted them.
Yeah,
the government got what it wanted.
Right, and so that's not quite over, quote-unquote, yet, but it is essentially going to be over within a matter of months.
I just hope it is the case that the SEC is not allowed to go after Odyssey at the same
time.
That's
what we're waiting. We're waiting to see if the other shoe is going to drop on that or not. So we'll keep you up to date on that as it develops. Then the SEC announced that they were going to get $30 million from Kraken a couple of weeks ago because Kraken was offering their customers staking services, and now that's been determined to be a quote-unquote security.
For whatever reason.
Yep. And then they...
I thought it was a service that they were offering. It sounded to me like a service and not a product, but... Okay.
Yep. And then the SEC now going after Paxos and Binance for having a stable coin called USD. And they basically have been told by their partners in the New York regulatory, whatever the hell they're called, the Department of Regulation or Financial Regulation, has gone after them and has said, you must halt issuing any further Binance USD, so there will never be more Binance USD issued, at least if it's done within the United States. And at this point, I believe there was also further news that Binance is going to end their partnership with Paxos At this point, Binance is also considering withdrawing from the United States entirely.
I've always thought it was weird that Binance and Paxos were, like, partnered together anyway, because they're competitors, aren't they?
They are, as far as being a Bitcoin exchange.
Okay.
But Paxos is kind of a real basic exchange. They only have, like, Bitcoin right. Cash, and Litecoin, so they're not really a serious competitor to Binance. Binance is a huge international exchange.
They're the largest in the world, right?
Yeah, and they've got, you know, zillions of different types of coins on there. So anyway, that's kind of just to keep you up to date here with what's been just going on in the last few weeks with the SEC and their ongoing attacks. This story is about Chase, one of the biggest banks in the United States, if not the entire world. And what are they up to as far as targeting cryptocurrency users, Arya?
Well, it starts off by talking about Chase, but it's certainly not limited to that at all. It's much more.
Oh, really?
It's much broader what this article is about. It's from Bitcoin Magazine. And just in case we needed a reminder, banks are showing us that they can and will gatekeep their customers' money to prevent them from engaging with Bitcoin.
Hmm.
This should be a call to action for Bitcoiners. I've always hated that term, Bitcoiner, but whatever. Or anyone else who wants to maintain control over their finances to move toward more proactive use of permissionless Bitcoin tools and practices. Ever since Jamie Dimon decried Bitcoin as a hyped-up fraud and a pet rock, that's the author here, have found myself unable to purchase Bitcoin using my Chase debit card on Cash App. And I'm not the only one. If you've been following Bitcoin Twitter recently, you may have seen Elena Joy tweet about her experience with the same. And they do have a tweet here where she says, Chase Bank just blocked me from buying Bitcoin through Cash App. Please
wow.
Listen to the recording I included in this post where the fraud representative explains what's going on. In both of our cases, it's the bank preventing Bitcoin purchases and blocking inbound fiat transfers to Cash App for customers that it has associated with Bitcoin. So,
So they're just blocking inbounds to Cash App, because Cash App, for listeners that don't know,
I think they mean outbound as well to Cash App. They said inbound, but I think it would be outbound money going to Cash App, right?
Meaning inbound to Cash App, outbound from the bank. So, but what this means, for listeners that don't know, Cash App is an app that is like PayPal. I mean, I probably don't have to explain it, because last I saw, Cash App was one of the most popular free financial apps on the planet.
It's fantastic. But I wish they hadn't banned me for life.
Right? But anyway, Cash App, you know, makes it relatively simple, like PayPal. You connect a bank account, and then you can withdraw funds from your bank account into your Cash App balance. You can use it to pay other Cash App users from your dollar balance. And that's the primary purpose of Cash App. But a few years ago, maybe several years ago at this point, Cash App added a Bitcoin purchasing option.
And this is because Jack Dorsey, I believe it was. No, Jack Dorsey's the Twitter guy.
No, he's the Cash App guy.
Okay.
He runs Square. Was the Twitter guy.
Okay. Well, Jack Dorsey is a Bitcoin fan.
Correct.
I think he's a Bitcoin maximalist. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah.
But he likes Bitcoin. He recognizes right. why it's valuable and what it's supposed to be used for, and they added it to Cash App, miraculously.
Yeah, and they made it easy. You know, they made it relatively simple to purchase Bitcoin. They ultimately did allow people to withdraw the Bitcoin, as I understand it, from the Cash App
yep.
To their own Bitcoin wallets, although there's some hoops, I believe, that you have to jump in order to do that. But to the extent that they did make Bitcoin more accessible to the average person, they did a successful job at that. And so kudos to them for that. I remember when they first turned it on, they actually had like a neat little introductory thing that you could go through to kind of learn the basics about Bitcoin.
Very cool.
It was very nicely animated, like really pretty graphics, and they did a really nice job of it. So kudos to them for that. But my point here is, when you are withdrawing from your bank account to Cash App, I don't think it's going to tell the bank this is for Bitcoin. You just
withdraw, you transfer to Cash App,
and then buy the Bitcoin,
yeah.
right? So they don't know that you're buying Bitcoin with this.
Well,
so they're just banning people from using money on Cash App?
It doesn't seem so. They seem to have some sort of way of knowing, and I don't know what that way is. But they do seem to know that the person was attempting or wanted to buy Bitcoin with the money. Maybe they had some sort of history with Bitcoin. I don't know.
That could be. Yeah, because I thought when you first told me about this story, the way you made it sound was that they were targeting Bitcoiners specifically, like that they knew that this person was a Bitcoiner, that they had some information that this individual...
That's probably true with some of them,
mm-hmm.
right? Like if you're regularly withdrawing money to Cash App or whatever, and they look on your Twitter and they see you talking about Bitcoin... That's all they need. Yeah, that would suggest it's enough for them.
Right.
In both of our cases, it's the bank preventing any Bitcoin purchases, mm-hmm. all under the guise of fraud protection. Or guys. Yeah. No, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Chase still allows ACH Bitcoin purchases, and fiat on Cash App can be used for investing in stocks. So... Chase still allows ACH Bitcoin purchases. Presumably they mean through an exchange that facilitates that, like Coinbase or whatever. It doesn't say exactly what mm-hmm. they mean. And fiat on Cash App can still be used for investing in stocks. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a newer thing, I think, on Cash App is a stock buying option.
Yeah, something similar to what Robinhood used to do, mm-hmm. I suppose.
I think they're competing with Robinhood.
Yeah. Saving or using Cash App's own debit card, not just Bitcoin. So
right.
If you're associated with Bitcoin, they're blocking your access to Cash App entirely, it would seem. Because they don't know whether you're sending the money there to buy stocks or use the debit card or whatever. And having used the Cash App debit card, it was actually pretty convenient itself. It was really easy
to find debit card.
Yeah. Also, no one seems to know exactly when this became Chase's policy. The fraud representative I spoke with wasn't sure and couldn't point to any documentation, but reasoned that the rule has been in place since early last year.
What's the rule?
He couldn't point to any particular rule. He just said it's been in place, man.
Listen, we're doing this. We don't know why we're doing it, but we are doing it. I'm sure of that.
Yet murkier still, loose chatter can be found on Reddit about this issue going back to at least April of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
A little over a month after the Crypto 6 raid.
Mm.
However, given that I and so many others were definitely buying Bitcoin via Chase Debit throughout 2021 and 2022, I'd wager that this policy...
Sorry. I now just made the connection. So they were trying to use their debit card to load onto Cash App. But he was saying that ACH still works... He's saying you can still use the ACH method to load money onto Cash App. So it sounds like what he's saying is that Chase is only blocking debit card loads, meaning that like on Cash App...
Well, this may be because of Visa and MasterCard then, rather than because of Chase.
Yeah, that's also a possibility.
Because it would be up to Visa or MasterCard mm-hmm. to block this sort of thing, I think
you're right. I mean, it could be either one, but yeah, that could explain why it would be blocked on the card but not blocked through ACH.
So he's wagering that the policy has only been exercised haphazardly, selectively, arbitrarily,
mm-hmm.
and I would suggest that's probably still the case. You just happen to finally be one of the people who've been caught up in it. Dark patterns abound, but for now, it seems like I just happen to be one of the unlucky ones. Mm. That said, there's nothing preventing this type of policy from being enforced broadly and in earnest by one or many or all banks.
Well, there are banks doing this, at least in the UK. I haven't heard a lot in the US about this yet, but there are banks like Santander Bank in the UK that have announced they will not process outgoing wire transfers to Bitcoin exchanges.
Really?
Yep.
I didn't know Santander was a UK bank.
They're an international bank. I think they're based in Spain, ultimately, but I could be wrong about that.
They won't allow people to send out wire transfers to
crypto exchanges?
Wow.
At least in the UK. I'm not sure if that's a international policy for them or just UK-based.
If banks feel threatened by Bitcoin, we're going to see more of these kinds of practices going forward.
Count on it.
Yeah. It's time to get proactive. We should expect this and prepare for it. So rather than railing against banks, I want to use this as a learning experience to reflect on the importance of permissionless, non-KYC Bitcoin mm-hmm. and the practical actions we can take to advance the cause. Number one, bank with backups and remember local options. Banking is a service, not servitude. Treat it as such. I wish he was a little more clear with them. It sounds nice, but I don't know what he means. Maintaining accounts at multiple banks may provide some limited fault tolerance against banks that take a hostile stance toward Bitcoin, assuming it does not become the industry norm.
Mm-hmm.
Further, smaller local and regional banks may be more willing to work with Bitcoin customers, as individual accounts would be far more meaningful to them than they are to larger national banks, though this certainly should not be taken for granted. And it, these all runs with this, with their own problems. If multiple bank, if you have multiple bank accounts and you're regularly buying Bitcoin, honestly, man, it's just a matter of time before they close your account.
Yeah, I don't know what it's like for the people buying on a smaller basis. You know, back when we were doing our thing, we were buying a much larger volume of Bitcoin, and that's obviously going to be directing bankers' attention to your account much quicker.
Right.
So I don't know if somebody who's buying, you know, $50 to $200 worth of Bitcoin every couple of weeks is really going to get on somebody's radar at a bank. I think their advice is pretty solid. It wouldn't hurt to have a backup option in place. And maybe local banks are friendlier to this. I have not seen any evidence of that being the case. But
yeah, same.
But you are at the very least more likely to get some level of an explanation from a local bank as opposed to a corporate bank, which usually will not explain to you anything about their policies or why they're not doing a thing or doing a thing or breaking up with you.
Yeah, I never got any explanation from banks about anything they were doing.
We did. We actually sat down with the bank president of Savings Bank of Walpole, and Chris Reitman, when they closed one of my accounts. The bank actually included they always give you a breakup letter. And with the corporate banks, it's very terse, very, you know, corporate. And
yeah, all I ever said was, we're closing your account or whatever.
Yeah, usually it's, we're closing your account based on our terms of service. We don't have to tell you why. Have a nice day. And that's it. Yeah. And then sometimes they'll give you a number you can call, and then you can talk to someone who won't actually tell you anything at all, so it's a complete waste of time. But in this case, it actually had the signature of the bank president and his office phone number on it. And said, if you have any questions, give me a call. And so I was like, yeah, I got questions. So I called up, and I asked if I could have a meeting with him, and the secretary or whatever scheduled a meeting, and me and Chris put on suits, and, you know, we went into the bank and sat down for over an hour and had a really interesting conversation with this guy. And he basically said that it was his decision to close the account because he wasn't comfortable enough knowing enough about cryptocurrency. And as the bank president at a small bank, he has to sign off on all wire transfers. And so he said that he's afraid basically of the federal government and, you know, what they might do to him. And he doesn't know enough about, like, he has to be aware to some extent of what destinations people's wires are going to or feel some level of comfortability with it.
Right.
And he said he did not know enough about crypto. We certainly were willing to answer any questions, and we did answer a lot of his questions, but obviously at that point my account was already closed. The point wasn't to save the account or anything like that. It was just to have an actual conversation with someone in banking about what the hell's going on behind the scenes with these people. So that was his explanation.
Certainly useful. And it would be useful if they more regularly provided explanations. Number two, if you must use KYC to Bitcoin services, do so thoughtfully. And this is Know Your Customer Bitcoin services. Exchanges that require your ID and stuff like that.
And they all do. Which ones don't?
Like local Bitcoins.
They're closing.
I know. But they weren't closed at the time this article was written.
And local Bitcoins started requiring Know Your Customer in 2017. So there's no non-Know Your Customer. Yeah, okay. There's no non
identified Agora Desk. Maybe
Agora Desk may still have that as an option. I hope they do.
And otherwise, you'd have to do so, you know, out there. And this article gets into it a bit in the real world, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of looking online, you wouldn't go through an exchange so much as you would go through sort of a system of people that you know who might have Bitcoin to sell you.
Man, it's getting harder and harder out there.
It is, man. It's not good. For Cash App and services like it, consider first loading in fiat and making buys out of the app's native cash balance instead of purchasing directly through a linked bank account where information is shared with the bank that allows it to flag the transaction for being related to Bitcoin. So you're absolutely right.
Oh, okay.
He had his debit card with his bank tied to Cash App, and he was trying to directly buy from it instead of transferring the money to Cash App first.
Oh, okay. So the debit card must have had some sort of...
Yeah.
Some sort of data, metadata or whatever, that transaction where it mentioned Bitcoin and the bank flagged it.
Yeah. I mean, that's silly on this person's part.
Yeah.
It's Shocking that someone who's a writer for Bitcoin magazine could make such a silly.
Oh, you don't know until you know. I mean, but
that's like
it might have worked before, and then all of a sudden stopped working.
Whether it worked or not is advertising to the bank, the enemy that you're buying Bitcoin.
Right.
And I don't understand.
It's not going to work with Chase. Yeah. If it works now, it isn't going to work forever.
I don't understand why he was even bothering to do it this way in the first place. Mm-hmm. Anyway, taking this small step may help to avoid gatekeeping and can provide some minor privacy from the bank at least. And
yeah,
that's
okay.
I don't understand why he wouldn't just default to that, but okay. Number three, become comfortable with non-KYC Bitcoin exchanges. So evidently they do exist. Just as many pre-coiners.
No, they don't.
Well, he seems to suggest they do.
There's
There's
only the exchanges that you can convert crypto to crypto.
Maybe.
I don't know what non-KYC exchanges allow you to actually send a wire transfer in.
Well, he's got BISC, B-I-S-K.
That's a decentralized exchange.
RoboSats. And
that one I've never heard of.
HODL.
Okay. I think HODL HODL is a local Bitcoin's competitor, if I recall correctly. The middle one I'm not familiar with, and BISC is the first kind of quote-unquote decentralized exchange. BISC...
But that's crypto to crypto.
No, they actually do have a category there for, at least as of the last time I used it, which was like 3 years ago. The category that they have there on BISC was a cash deposit category, and I was scared to death to use this as somebody who was a regular Bitcoin seller on local Bitcoins, because there was no, if I recall correctly, I looked into it. Number one, there was very poor volume. There was hardly anyone using it at the time. So I don't know if that's gotten better or not. Like, the whole volume of the entire exchange was very low, and the category of buying with cash was even lower. Like, hardly any.
I can imagine.
Hardly any offers. Hardly anybody was using it. But the real problem with that exchange was that there was no, because it's decentralized, so there's no central provider, there was no escrow. And that means it is like wide open to scam artists. Because at least with the local Bitcoins, you have the escrow service of local Bitcoins or AgoraDesk or whatever it is we're talking about here.
Right.
Where there is still a centralized provider, they hold the Bitcoin into escrow, and if one side or the other is acting suspicious in some way, you can flag the transaction, it goes to the administrator, and then they come in and they look at the evidence, and they say, oh, yep, suspicious, reverse the transaction or whatever. You have a third party who can come in and make a decision. I didn't see anything like that with BISC when I looked at it a few years ago. It just seemed like this was total scam playground, basically. It seemed
dangerous. And as a seller, that's a really interesting take. I would expect the buyer to be more suspicious than anyone because the seller hasn't proved that they have the Bitcoin at that point.
Yeah, that's probably true as well. Yeah. I don't know. I never actually tried it. It just looked really shifty to me.
But they are allegedly permissionless channels. I'm not recommending them.
I'd stay the hell away from BISC if I were a new buyer.
Yeah, I've never used any of them. I can't vouch for them. But permissionless Bitcoin is certainly a good thing. For anyone just getting started, BTC Sessions has excellent video tutorial content on all three, which are linked. And they are linked here to Bitcoin Magazine. I can't link it to you here. Well, I can put it on our social. So check that out at social.freetalklive.com. There's more about this coming up, including more ways that you should be familiarizing yourself with Bitcoin, including really good advice, finding someone who wants to pay you to do something in Bitcoin.
That's a good way to get it.
It is.
No doubt about it. Of course, the best way to do that, if you're a libertarian, would be to move here to New Hampshire, where you can actually find, like, homeowners who will hire you to do mow their lawn or something like that, right? Like, you can get paid in Bitcoin or shovel their driveway or something like that. The number is 603-283-6160. Having that community of Bitcoin users is going to become more important than ever, I think. It's Free Talk Live.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA News Update. The Environmental Protection Agency ordering Norfolk Southern Railroad to pay for all cleanup associated with a train derailment earlier this month in East Palestine, Ohio.
Norfolk Southern will clean up all contamination in soil and water and safely transport that contamination to the appropriate location.
EPA Administrator Michael Regan promised the railroad would be held responsible. Ukrainian President Zelensky is thanking the U.S. for rallying international support for his country in its fight against Russia. In a tweet following President Biden's speech on the conflict from Poland, Zelensky repeated Biden's remarks that the capital city of Kyiv stands strong and free nearly a year into the invasion. The Biden administration is out with a new immigration policy that seeks to limit asylum. The protection would not be available to those who did not apply before entering Mexico. In order to seek asylum, migrants must schedule a time to arrive at a port of entry. John Schaefer, USA News.
Are you curious about what might be missing from your diet and supplement choices? Take a free health assessment to identify your possible nutrient deficiencies. As a certified holistic health coach, I will help you assess and prioritize a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the mineral doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live. You join the show here. Number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Ian and Aria here. You can join us online, of course, anytime you want. Just head over to freetalklive.com and enjoy the features that we have for you. It's once again, freetalklive.com. If you appreciate the work that we do here and you want to help support Free Talk Live, you can join Adam, who is a Free Talk Live Silver level supporter of our AMPS program. AMPS stands for Advertise, Market, Promote, and Support. It is a way for you to directly support what we do here. And as I said, this year, since we've basically have no more paid advertisers on Free Talk Live, I would be happy to never have another one if we can get enough of our listeners to directly support what we do, and then that would be absolutely great. I think that would be just wonderful. We're not quite there yet, but we've got over 130 people supporting the
Awesome.
Ask program now, and that's up from like 100 just a couple months ago. So thank you to everybody that has signed up, including our silver amp, Adam. Silver is $5 a month. That's all we ask for, and it helps us advertise, market, promote, and support our mission here on Free Talk Live to talk about the ideas of liberty, peace, crypto, freedom, 7 nights a week here on Free Talk Live. So if you appreciate the work that we do and you want to help support us, go to amps.freetalklive.com. That's amps.freetalklive.com. We're talking about this crypto crackdown that continues to worsen in not just the field of banking, but also the cryptocurrency industry in general. Exchanges are being targeted by the SEC. We're seeing the SEC going after the crypto development community out there, basically making the United States one of the least friendly countries, basically making the U.S. almost as bad as China as far as being unfriendly towards cryptocurrency and the business and the industry of cryptocurrency.
Yeah, it just takes a very different approach to it, where China just outright bans it,
right,
and, you know, does the obviously Chinese thing. The American government chooses this more fascist approach of just controlling all of the avenues into the Bitcoin industry.
Yep, and now they're telling people, they're denying or declining people's debit card charges at big banks like Chase. And you, I think, are onto something, Aria, where it may not actually be Chase that's doing it as much as it is Visa or MasterCard, the people that are, you know, their logos are on the debit cards, the people that are, you know, providing that service.
Well, we've heard about this in the past with some of them, haven't we? I seem to think so.
Well, we know that Visa and MasterCard are critical towards towards cryptocurrency. Historically, they have been.
Bitcoin competes with a lot of banking industry things, but as far as direct, obvious competitors, Bitcoin and Visa, Bitcoin's an obvious competitor to debit cards.
It is, which is probably one reason why MasterCard invested in the digital currency group, which then subsequently paid the Bitcoin programmers to essentially cripple Bitcoin as a payments platform.
Yeah.
And then Visa, I think there's been some announcements that they want to integrate crypto or whatever and allow that to be used as payments. I don't know if that's ever become any kind of thing. So, like, on one hand, they talk about how they're interested in the technology, but on the other hand, they act to try to restrict it.
Yeah, they want to restrict it. They're hoping that the technology dies and then just sort of fades away and they never have to actually do anything about it. And I don't know how to explain this to them. It's not dying. It hasn't died. It's not going to die.
No, it's not going to die, but it is under severe restrictions. Library, which is a company that has been targeted by the SEC, and the SEC defeated them in a district court battle that has lasted for years here in New Hampshire, the federal court level. They have not yet been completely obliterated. They still are able to post to their Twitter account. And they posted earlier today.
Will they lose their Twitter account, or would that just sort of...
What? I suspect the Twitter account will continue. They could probably just hand that over to, you know, somebody else. That's not the company, right?
Right.
It's just somebody.
But it's a company asset.
Yeah,
probably not one that's worth any money, but...
No, I don't think it's worth... I mean, it probably isn't worth that much, although they do have 110,000 followers. That's not terrible. But they tweeted this today. I think it's relevant to the conversation that we're having here. They said, how can a normal person easily get $100 worth of cryptocurrency anonymously today, in person or online? When crypto answers this, it takes over the world. If it can't, and it hasn't, it will remain niche.
So really good sentiment. And, of course, this was the whole reason that local Bitcoins and other cryptocurrency exchanges existed, because it's important to provide these avenues for people to take money and to turn it into cryptocurrency in a way that the government can't track, in the way that banks can't track and can't keep an eye on and can't prevent, to provide them with a way of directly controlling their own financial freedom without having to ask permission and without having to jump through any hoops. And certainly, when I sold Bitcoin, I got, you know, I identified people and I asked to see their ID, not for $20 worth of Bitcoin or whatever, mm-hmm. but if they wanted, you know, $100, yeah, sorry, dude, I got to see your ID, but I'm not turning that information over to banks. I'm not turning that information over to governments. I'm just...
Well, not purposely.
Yeah. I'm just protecting myself and my own interests here, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of what the banks are doing, too, but they're protecting their own interests from your freedom. They're not protecting their own interests from scammers out there, or not protecting themselves from scammers out there. They're protecting themselves from Bitcoin. And that's the fundamental difference.
Yeah. Was there more from your story that you wanted to share tonight from Bitcoin Magazine about these people who are being restricted from making purchases through their Chase Bank debit cards?
There's a little more worth saying,
All right,
think.
Let's hear it.
So be flexible and creative with peer-to-peer payment methods. And this is good advice, but it's not going to solve the Bitcoin problem. Cash App, Zelle, PayPal, Venmo, Apple Cash, Revolut, etc., these services that most users seem to be transacting with on no KYC exchanges, they would all become eager and active agents of financial gatekeeping in any truly antagonistic anti-privacy environment, even when used in a peer-to-peer fashion.
So let's be clear here. If you're using any of those applications, you are risking having to buy from another individual. You can buy through Cash App all day and night through their own official Bitcoin purchasing. But if you use that to send to someone to buy Bitcoin with, and Cash App or Zenmo or Venmo or Zelle or whatever get wind of that, you're going to lose your access to those services. Is forever.
Yes, you will. Speaking as one of those people who has been banned from almost all of these services, Cash App, Zelle, PayPal, Venmo, all of those have banned me for life.
Yep.
And it was all for selling Bitcoin, buying and selling Bitcoin individually from one person to another.
As soon as they catch wind of it, you won't have a second chance. Yep. It'll just be you're done. They're going to just cancel your account.
That's why I specifically said in the instruction notes, do not put anything about Bitcoin in the payment notes. And people still
and
would.
Still do.
Right? And it's not because, you know, I'm ashamed of Bitcoin or because there's anything illegal about it. It's because, no, the Venmo and Cash App, they just didn't like it.
Yeah,
and maybe that, and that's sure, that was the wrong way of going about doing things. But the problem has to be solved for Bitcoin people. Right. It's got to be solved.
It's going to have to end up being person-to-person sales like the old days of local Bitcoins. And I know
which
that
they got rid of.
Local Bitcoins got rid of it. But I the last I recall, AgoraDesk still had that option. I've never used it personally.
Oh, it's risky.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's as risky as some of the other options. I mean, as long as you're buying from a seller that's got a good reputation, there's no risk to the buyer in that case. There may be a risk to the seller of possibly being robbed in person by someone.
Yeah.
But you know, if you're meeting in a public location where there's, you know, other people around or whatever, I think it's probably a pretty safe thing to do. I recall AgoraDesk did still have the local purchase option where you could indicate where your physical location was, and then on your sale, you know, your sale ad, you say, you know, I want to meet you at McDonald's or whatever.
Yeah.
So that may be what this has to come down to, you know, because you can't trust these online methods and the government's going to be cracking down. This may be the way it has to go in the future, where people are just having to once again meet in person with other human beings. But even then, they're still going to be trying to crack down. You know, they're going to start putting undercover agents in there, and they're going to start trying to do...
Well, that's why local Bitcoins got rid of the person-to-person transactions. So that's how I understand it.
No, they got rid of it because the government was cracking down on them.
Always remember, and this is surprising, that there are other payment options such as gift cards, the original digital bearer items.
Also loaded with scam artists.
Yes. That's why I'm surprised to see this even mentioned as a valid approach for acquiring Bitcoin. But yeah, I guess so. If
it's
you have
a valid approach, but it's also loaded with scam artists.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a valid, you know, $500 iTunes gift card or whatever, and you want to buy $500 worth of Bitcoin, and there's someone who can facilitate that, then sure, I could see it. But, man, that area is definitely filled with fraud, and
I don't know if
enter at your own risk.
Yeah, I don't know if the sellers are... I'd have to think about how a seller could run fraud on that, but I know that the victims, the buyers in a lot of cases, are victimized, are people who are being victimized by, like, romance scammers. So romance scammers will tell their their victims to go out and buy them these gift cards, and then they go online and then they use the gift cards purchased by the romance scam victims to buy from legitimate Bitcoin sellers, who of course have no idea that they're buying gift cards that were bought through the, you know, acquired through a scam.
Yeah, I will say unequivocally, when I was selling Bitcoin and someone said, hey, look, I don't have the cash right now, but can I give you a $300 iTunes gift card instead? My answer would be, no, you cannot.
Yeah.
Even if I was interested in iTunes, that's rife with scams, and I don't want any part in it.
Yeah.
Number five, find your local Bitcoin community. This is probably the most important. And as you mentioned this, if you're going out to the break a little while ago, why New Hampshire is so important.
Mm-hmm.
In the steadily advancing shadow war on all things permissionless, private, and peer-to-peer, this is our best defense. Don't just wait until you need other crypto people to get to know other crypto people. To paraphrase Texas Slim, shake your local Bitcoiner's hand. Get to know
people. If you
have
them.
Yeah. Get to know people and never underestimate the power of simply asking around. There could be real live Bitcoiners near you looking to sell some coin and happy to see it go to someone else rather than to a bunch of lettuce-headed fiat speculators on some faceless centralized Ponzi casino exchange. What's more, let folks know your skills, talents, and expertise. You may be surprised to find an interested market that pays in Bitcoin. And that's probably one of the better ways of doing it. Also, it wasn't until a few weeks ago when someone pointed out to me, but crypto mining is your other final, almost always guaranteed to be successful avenue of earning non-KYC cryptocurrency.
That's a great point. Yeah, if you have the technical chops to do crypto mining, which does require some level of technical chops.
And some hardware.
And some hardware. Although if you're doing something like Monero, you don't need to have the craziest hardware, as I understand, although you may not get that much out of it.
Yeah.
But it's basically a way to turn your power bill into cryptocurrency. And the power company has no idea that you're doing it. So it's pretty much off the, you know, as far as KYC and anybody knowing that you've acquired the Bitcoin or the Monero or whatever it is you decide to mine, basically you're the only one who knows that it's happening. So that is, as you say, something they cannot take away. And that's
I'm sure they'll try to find a way.
They would have a really tough time with that. Yeah. I mean, barring shutting off your electricity, they wouldn't be able to really know. Like in the same way that they don't know if you're growing marijuana per se, except having to fly a camera, FLIR camera, infrared camera, over your house to see if you got a huge row of lights and a grow room set up. The actual,
do they really do that?
They do that, yeah. The actual use of the power.
How are they allowed to do that? That seems so unconstitutional.
Well, I don't know if it's unconstitutional or not. I mean, essentially they're looking at heat signatures off your home, right? That's
inside of your home, though, right?
Heat comes through your roof.
I guess. That seems unlawful, though.
Yeah, I don't know if that, I suspect that's been challenged. I can't say for sure. I know a whole lot about the history.
Well, it's the government, and I have no doubt the Supreme Court will find some way of saying, oh, yeah, this is totally fine. You don't have a right to not have the government watch you on. I mean, your body heat probably to some extent is projected on inside of your house as well, and they probably could, if it's sensitive enough, monitor you walking around through your house.
Yeah, as long as you're not setting up, 100 crypto miners, you're probably not going to trip any kind of alert system at the power company or whatever. If your power bill's going up 20%, it's not going to be a big deal. But if it goes up 200%, then maybe you'll attract some attention. But they're not looking there. You know, the feds or the cops or whatever, they're not looking for crypto miners yet.
Well, there's absolutely nothing illegal or even shady about crypto mining.
No, I think they would have a really tough time with that. Although, that was my prediction, is that the SEC may go after crypto miners next. If the SEC can get away with claiming that staking is somehow a quote-unquote security. And for listeners that don't know, staking is sort of the other alternative to doing crypto mining.
I've always been a big fan of proof of stake.
I mean, some people hate it. Some people think it's fine. Some people are big fans of it. I don't really care. I think it's fine, right? Is it really worth doing? I don't know. Some people want to do it. Fine. The point about it is, if they can say that it is a security, then why can't they say mining is a security too?
I don't know.
They probably will. Right. It just seems like they're just saying everything's a security. If they can say that a stable coin is a security,
a stablecoin that doesn't specifically doesn't change in value.
Correct. The point of the stablecoin is that it stays quote-unquote stable in that one U.S. dollar stablecoin is always worth one U.S. dollar, in theory. You know, there can be slight variations, like 1.001.
Well, sometimes they just collapse, like
Terra.
Terra did.
Yeah, but if they can get away with that and say that Binance USD, which is the third most popular stablecoin on the planet, is a quote-unquote security, then they can say anything is a security, and then therefore they can say crypto mining is a security because you're getting into it knowing you're going to bring more money in or something like that, and so therefore it's a security, and you didn't register with the SEC, so now we're going to ruin you financially or possibly put you in prison, because the SEC can bring criminal charges from what I understand as well. They just haven't been. They've been going after companies for the money.
That's nice and evil of them.
Yeah.
Simultaneously, I guess.
So it's ugly. It is really ugly out there. You know, since you mentioned Terra, mm-hmm. UST, which was for a time actually, I think, bigger than Binance USD.
Yeah, they were doing really well for a while, right up until they weren't. And, I mean, it went downhill quickly with Terra.
Yeah, it was a disaster where the world's most popular, what they call decentralized or algorithmic stablecoin, meaning that UST was not actually backed by dollars. It was backed by its own token, which is called Luna. And I don't want to get into how it ostensibly worked, because ultimately it didn't work. It got crushed by...
It did for a time.
It did for a few years, and then what apparently happened, the story behind the scenes, allegedly, was that the guy from FTX, SBF, that guy that was running FTX, he destroyed UST. He used his customers' funds against their will, right?
Like, yeah.
Without their permission, and did some sort of crazy, I don't know if it's like buying whatever he bought, or I don't know how all that works, right? Like, I'm not a financial expert. I didn't follow it closely to see exactly the guts of it. But it seems fairly well accepted in the industry that SBF destroyed Terra, and he did it on purpose. And he probably did it at the behest of his handlers, people in the banking system, Gary Gensler from the SEC. He probably did this to take down the algorithmic stablecoin that was having tremendous success. And unfortunately, the algorithm did not keep it afloat. It did go through what they call a death spiral, and it went down to where the UST, it's still out there. Like, you just can't get rid of the coin. It's still there.
Right.
It's worth like 3 cents today.
That's higher than I would have expected, honestly.
I think it's gone down as low as like less than a cent, and it's since come back to three or something the last time I looked.
Well, that's good, I guess.
Somebody, I don't know whether it was a joke or they were serious, they were saying that they should redenominate UST, because they changed the name of it. It's now USTC, because when Luna died, they kind of came out with the next Luna, so there's a Luna 2 now, there's a Terra.
What is there?
There's another Luna. And so they renamed the original Luna to LUNC, as in Luna Classic. And then they took UST and they added a C to the end of that. So somebody said they should make USTC US Terra Cent and redenominate it to 1 cent instead of a dollar. I don't know if it's ever going to happen, but
it sounds appropriate.
It would be interesting to see if it, you know, could. So what happened recently, this was last week, Do Kwon is the founder of Luna. This is the programmer.
Okay.
This is the creator of Luna.
And Luna still exists, but now they're on 2.0, I guess?
Correct, yeah. But there's no stablecoin associated with 2.0. So Luna
is not trying again?
Not yet. Maybe they will.
I hope they will. I mean, they had a good idea, and now we know some problems that the idea had.
I really kind of hope they would, too, even though, obviously, it's going to have a tough road to climb if they do that. But the world needs a decentralized stablecoin now more than it ever has. But anyway, they're now going after this guy. The SEC has announced that they are charging Terraform Labs and its CEO, Do Kwon, with fraud, alleging they orchestrated a multi-billion-dollar, quote-unquote, crypto asset securities fraud. This is, you know, almost a year since the entire crash of UST. So a little late to the party here, SEC, but again, just showing that they're going after stablecoins in as many forms as they possibly can, even those that are completely gone. Quan and Terraform allegedly schemed from April of 2018 until the collapse of Terra USD, known as UST, and its sister coin Luna in May of 2022 to raise billions from investors through offer and sale of a, quote, interconnected suite of crypto asset securities, including securities-based swaps that mirrored U.S. equities and, most famously, the so-called algorithmic stablecoin Terra USD. The company advertised it as a yield-bearing coin offering to pay interest of up to 20%, which should have been like a heads-up for people. Like, how can they do this? How can a 20% interest rate be sustainable? It wasn't. Like many stablecoins.
Yeah, what? I don't understand. Were they loaning them out?
They were.
Okay.
So, I mean, that was sort of the alleged reason why it could be done, but it still seemed too good to be true.
Yeah, 20% is pretty high. I mean, that wasn't too disproportionate to some of the interest rates that we saw in the cryptocurrency lending industry right at the beginning of DeFi, that's decentralized finance, and other sophisticated finance, other crypto loaning communities, but 12%, 10% were what you'd more frequently see. Stablecoins were always higher for whatever reason. Than like
on the interest
Bitcoin.
Rates, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
But I don't think I ever saw any other get close to 20%.
The SEC alleges that Quan marketed the assets, including as profit-bearing securities, quote-unquote, repeatedly claiming the tokens would increase in value. SEC's enforcement director said in a statement, quote, today's action not only holds the defendants accountable for their roles in Terra's collapse, which devastated both retail and institutional investors and sent shockwaves through the crypto markets, but once again highlights that we look to the economic realities of an offering, not the labels put on it, he said. And by the way, Do Kwan's whereabouts are currently unknown, but the Terra co-founder was recently believed to be in Serbia. According to South Korean intelligence, Kwan is wanted in South Korea for his involvement in the collapse of Terra USD. So dude's on the run.
Jesus Christ. All he tried to do was create a product for people to use.
Yeah, and it failed, but...
But not because he wanted it to.
Yeah, I don't believe that this man was scamming anyone.
No.
I don't believe that for a moment. He truly did believe in this thing. It did work for a time. And then someone with the economic weight to crush this thing, SBF from the FTX exchange, ostensibly was able to successfully destroy this thing. And yet he is not being blamed.
But that just highlights, you know, problems in the technology, in the algorithm that could be fixed.
Right. And you know, when you're getting into cryptocurrency, that you're taking a risk.
Yeah.
You know that when you get into something called an algorithmic stablecoin, that there's a chance that the algorithm isn't going to work, that some sort of bug is in the programming, or they didn't foresee a certain set of circumstances that would cause this thing to fail. And you should understand that. And I understand there's some people out there that may have been misled by others in the industry into buying a thing, but this guy was never dishonest in my seeing of the things that he said.
No.
That of what you're getting into.
And I saw something similar happen to this with helium, which was HELEUM, mm-hmm. I think, where it was this algorithm that would automatically use your Uphold account to transfer money across different fiats and cryptocurrencies in order to make you a profit, right? If Litecoin was down, it would buy Litecoin. If Litecoin was up, it would, you know, sell it and get you back into USD or whatever. That's mm-hmm. the basic idea of it. And it would do this automatically. However, Bitcoin Gold began going down, and the algorithm said, oh, it's going down, buy it. And
oh,
it
no.
kept going down, and the algorithm said, buy more,
oh,
and
God.
Buy more, and buy more. And everyone who used it, all their Uphold money was just sunk into Bitcoin Gold, which
just kept going down.
Tragic. Man. But that was the algorithm doing exactly what the algorithm was told to do. So, hey, improved the algorithm, and that never happened again.
Didn't it go out of business?
I think so.
Hey, look, it's a risky Wild West world, and we don't need the government to step in and try to put safety rails on it for us. More coming up.
Do you ever get the feeling that the world is being held together with duct tape? Every day we're thrown some new meaningless drama in the fake news to distract us from the reality we're all about to face. Between the government trying to print their way out of debt, military conflicts, the disintegration of our most trusted institutions, and a looming food shortage, preparedness is no longer a choice. It's a necessity. You can trust My Patriot Supply. Our emergency food kits come packed with tasty meals averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one kit for each person in your family. Self-Reliance is the only alternative to government food lines. Time is running out. Become ungovernable. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and save on dozens of different emergency food kits while you can. These kits are in stock, ship fast, and arrive in unmarked boxes for your privacy. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com before the next crisis strikes. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Has your body ever gone low blood sugar, feeling weak, shaky, knowing you better eat something fast? We all know high blood sugar can lead to many metabolic problems. At GCNteam.com, we have a healthy blood sugar pack, focusing on the structure and function of stable blood sugar. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Nothing feels worse than unstable blood sugar. Call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. danpilla.com.